Well, that's a hit caught over the head if you get that.
Yeah.
Line.
Okay, yeah. You'll have to be careful. Thank you very much.
Hello.
So we'll call this meeting of the Cash Valley Board of Trustees to order. We're grateful that you're all here this evening, and we have some new faces that we'd like to introduce or have them introduce themselves. Then I think we'll go around the table after that and just tell our name a little bit. So let's have the new folks introduce themselves. We'll start with Cecilia Benson. Tell us a little bit about yourself, which community you represent.
Logan.
Okay.
And I'm from Idaho Falls originally. We've lived here in the valley for 42 years and just enjoyed working in the school system. I'm a registered nurse and just really excited. Our family's utilized the transportation here for many, many years, and I just was asking the new mayor some questions about it, and here I am. She just
asked if I would
like to do that, and so I'm excited to be on this board.
And she's a wonderful musician also.
Wonderful. We'll have to hear more about that. But our Christmas social next year.
Yeah.
We got
okay. Patrick introduced himself last time. Do you want to just mention it again?
Yeah, Patrick Jenkins. I grew up in Logan, and I actually grew up in River Heights, but now I live about 2 miles east of River Heights in Logan, so haven't moved far from home. It's good to be here on the board. Thank you.
Thank you again. Lloyd Berenson.
Yeah, just from North Logan. Been here and raised our kids. Been here for 32 years. Good to be with you.
Well, a little more than that. Been mayor for 8 years of North Logan City, right?
Yeah. I got to finish that on January at noon.
Okay.
January 1st at noon. So.
And your other responsibilities, somewhat related to transportation and air quality.
Yeah, I've been with the health department for 32 years. I'm the director there and get to deal with a lot of air quality issues and things. And it's a great partnership to be able to work with the transit district on some of those things. So.
Okay, great. Lyle Lundberg. Where's Lyle?
Right here, Lyle Lundberg. Born and raised in Logan, love Cache Valley, and looking forward to serving on the board.
Is that where you work, the family, a little more?
I've had small businesses here in Logan for some time, quite a few years. I've worked in the auto repair business for a number of years. I have a wife and 4 beautiful children, and
great.
And his brother's my son-in-law, I just want to mention.
Oh.
All right. So we have connections, and his family farmed when he was very young in Northwest Logan. Know a little bit about that, where I kind of did a little farming too as a kid. So.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, let's just go around and introduce everybody else to these new folks, if we could. Eric?
My name is Eric Ashcroft.
That's all you want to say.
Okay. Jeff Turley, representing Providence City.
Roger Pond, River Heights.
Dean Quayle for Logan.
Sue Sorensen for Logan.
Glenn Schmidt for Logan.
I introduced myself.
Okay, Roger Jones, represent Logan City.
Holly Brunheyer from Lewiston.
Ron Natale from Richmond.
Craig Wright, Hyde Park.
Heidi Harper, Smithfield.
And I do have a husband and 8 children and 22 grandchildren.
Norman Larson from Nibley.
New member of the Nibley City Council, a new elected official as well. Norman,
right,
so congratulations on that.
I got training on.
Yes. So we kind of have a special presentation to a retiring board member. She's not retiring. She's just leaving the board after many years. And that's Sally Peterson, who's represented North Logan City for, what, 9 years?
9 years.
9 years. And just done an outstanding job of representing North Logan and serving the board well. She followed in the footsteps of her husband, who served on the board for a number of years and was chair of the board, too, Mike Peterson. So we appreciate the service of your entire family. So, Sally, we have a plaque. Do you want to... You go present.
I was going to have you. I'll take the picture.
Okay. I'll take the picture. You present.
option to be a part of that, and to get to know all of you and help. I work with students that with disabilities that use the bus, so I feel like I've got to be a special part of the transit district because it helped me through the knowledge from all of this to help my students. So you guys will always be a part. I'm going to always be using it and keeping up with the transit board. So thank you for all your friendship, and I'm going to miss sitting next to you, Roger. It was fun. Good times, cinnamon candies.
Thank you, Sally. We'll miss you, and we appreciate you very much. Thank you. We'll go ahead with the agenda now. We need a motion on the minutes, if we could. Did everybody have a chance to take a look? Any corrections or addition to the minutes from our last meeting, the December meeting where we approved the budget? I'd accept a motion to approve the minutes. We do have a motion from Craig to approve the minutes. We have a second from Roger. Any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Thank you. The minutes are approved. We typically approve the agenda. Do we have a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved.
Okay, Dean moved. Roger seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Next meeting is February 28th right here in this facility, and we're grateful to Bridgerland for allowing us to meet here. It's quite convenient. Any questions or comments for management or board members? We always put that first on the agenda. Anything we should talk about, add to the agenda? We'll go ahead then, seeing none. And is Gordon here?
He was supposed to be, but I guess.
Okay.
I don't know what happened.
We'll pass on that number six or that agenda item and maybe come back later to it. Presentation on the video project by Jacob Olson, a USU student. We have Jacob here. Did you want to introduce this a little thought?
Sure. So Jacob contacted us a while back and said, hey, he's wanting to do a project, and we look forward when students from the university want to do projects with us. And I thought it would be informative to have him share his project with you and also maybe why he wanted to do his project with CBTD. And so Jacob was kind enough to come and talk to you tonight.
Maybe before you get to the project, tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how long you've been at USU, and what you're studying.
My name is Jake Olson. I am a journalism major. I'm a senior at Utah State University. Can everybody hear me? Okay.
Can we turn his mic up, or is it?
Sure thing. Is this better?
A little bit.
Okay. My name is Jake Olson. I am a journalism major at Utah State University. I am studying public relations, and I'm originally from Ephraim, Utah. I'm new to the Cache Valley. My sister lives in Providence. She is a school teacher at Spring Creek, and I ride the CBT bus, CBTD, every single day. So that's the connection that I have with the bus system. And I took a multimedia class last semester, and I had an opportunity to do a video project, and I thought, well, what could I do it on? And the thought came CBTD, because I appreciated the bus system and I thought it would be fun to learn more about it. So I made a video of it. And it's not very long, but it's...
You stood to a clubhouse, a grocery shop, and a home.
We help get a lot of people from point A to point B.
Gives me the expected freedom to pay for parking. Thanks for 4,000 students not have to pay any extra.
There are so many things I love about working for CBTD. The company itself is just great. I love my supervisors. They're really good people. They really care about us. I think my favorite part has to be just the driving. For a long time, when I was little, I wanted to drive a bus, actually. I idolized my school bus driver. Then on my very first day of school, I got onto his bus. He's like, hi, I'm Dave, I'm your bus driver. Nice to meet you. I've never seen you before. What's your name? And he went through the whole thing. And I was like, I want to have his job.
This has been one of the few jobs that I've actually had enjoyed going to work to. And for a couple reasons.
challenges, and one I see is driving the bus, kind of like a daily challenge, and also too, I enjoy people I work with.
I actually really enjoy driving and being a student because there's people I interact with that ride the bus that I have classes with, too. So it's fun to have conversations like that with them. They get on the bus and they're like, oh, I didn't know you drove for them. It's like, yeah, I do.
I just love it here. I like being a part of something in the community that makes it a better community.
Any questions?
Very well done.
Thank you.
So you submitted that for a class project?
I did.
Did you get a good grade?
A decent grade.
Okay.
I passed the class, so.
We think it deserves an A.
Well, thank you. Thank
helps,
you.
So.
Thank you. Appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
All right.
Anything else on that?
No.
Okay. Yeah, good work. Thanks for taking time to come and share with us. Good luck finishing up your senior year. We put the swearing in of new board members next on the agenda.
Curtis will do that.
Okay. Curtis is going to do that. So I think we need to invite our four board members, new board members, to stand. Those that haven't been sworn in. Were you sworn in, Patrick?
Yeah, I've been sworn in.
Okay. You were sworn in.
So if you have three new board members stand, you should have a paper like this in front of you. This is a reminder, we will need you to take and print your name and then sign it as well. What we'll do is I'll have you repeat after me. This oath, you'll be able to have it in front of you so that if I mumble, you'll be able to understand what's on here. So if you raise your right hand and repeat after me. I, and then state your name.
I, Lloyd Lumber.
Having been appointed to the office of board member.
Having been appointed to the office of board member.
To the Board of Trustees for the Cache Valley Transit District.
To the Board of Trustees for the Cache Valley Transit District.
Do solemnly swear that I will support, obey, and defend.
Do solemnly swear that I will support, obey, and defend.
The Constitution of the United States.
The Constitution of the United States.
And the Constitution of this state.
And the Constitution of this state.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
And that I will discharge the duties of my office with fidelity.
Welcome to the board. Thank you.
You better say who you are.
Good idea, Roger. We didn't introduce our staff here to the new members.
Take the
Curtis,
microphone
you
around.
Start.
Can I take the microphone around?
Yeah. Please.
Everybody's in the car.
I'm Sharice Van Dyke. I take minutes. I'm an admin assistant.
My name is Colton Fulmer, and I'm the IT guy.
I'm Jody Kimball, and I'm the operations manager for CBTD.
I'm Curtis Roberts. I'm over all of the administration side.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Next on the agenda, Ron Natale is going to talk to us about Survey Monkey, or as some people called it, Monkey Survey.
I prefer the Monkey Survey, but I've been corrected too many times, so we call it the Survey Monkey. Last March, as you know, we passed our new policy manual, which is based on policy governance. As part of this, we need to get a reasonable interpretation of the policies by the general manager. We attempted to do that last year, and then when we got the results, they basically didn't do us any good because we couldn't tie the written comments to a specific policy. And I mean, we got numbers, but we just couldn't do it. So we pulled this back, and the PEPCO what you think his interpretation is. Your goal is to, let me read, I found a good statement in one of my policy books. I meant to grab it.
So we have created the initial policy.
Correct.
We created all the words, and then we gave it to Todd, and Todd is to create, Todd has created a reasonable, in what he has determined to be a reasonable interpretation of our words.
Correct.
Okay. What if we feel that his supporting documentation doesn't quite give us what we want?
disinformation when you go through the survey?
Yeah.
Write it in the comment section.
Okay. What my question is, you know, I can say, yes, they're all reasonable, and yes, what he's provided will support his reasonableness, but maybe there's something else that I want to see.
And you put it in the comment section.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Any questions, any comments, there's something you don't understand, please put it in the comment section. That comment section will be attached to you, so we will know who provides it, or I should say, I will know who provides it.
And are we going through the entire manual, Ron, or is
we're
it
doing
the
one
issues
policy
of,
at a time?
Okay. All right.
We're not going to give you.
But
we're not giving you.
But
everything.
Eventually.
We will go through it. Our goal, as we discussed at our last PEP meeting, our goal is that we at least get through sections 2.4 and 2.5 by August 1st. And the reason I'm pointing out to 2.4 and 2.5, both of those policies deal with the budgeting issues. And the budget cut, it will be presented to us as early as September of this year. So we want to have those done and resolved by August 1st. And then I think we got one or two after that, but at least to get those two done so that the board will have those in their pocket, those done, and so that when the budget is presented to us, we're in sync, hopefully.
So one more question.
Yes.
We had an extensive training on this, and
right.
Now we have some brand new board members. How is the easiest way for them to not feel like they're walking around in a great green fog?
Thank you.
I'll open up my, or Craig, one of you, get the policy book out. One of the things that we talked about, I was asked to help to stand in.
Thank you, Ben.
On the training of the new board members today, which was really good, and a good discussion. But we talked about that little booklet. And everybody on the board should have one, except for the new board members.
And if you don't, then let
me
know.
I'm looking at you and I'm going, am I right in that making that statement?
Yeah.
Everybody has that, okay. Most of us have been on the board, there's a few of them, except for the new ones, we've been through the extensive training actually the end of 2016. So we feel that gives you a really good synopsis of policy governance. And I've offered my phone number and email address that's in the member of the board listing to have them call me or send me emails if there's something they don't understand.
And I would encourage them to do that because it's very difficult to understand at the very beginning.
Can I jump in?
Sure.
In our last PEP committee meeting, for those that are new to the PEP committee, public engagement policy, one of the things we do is kind of prepare some of this information to present to the larger board so that you're not wade through all the details, which you can if you want. One of the things we talked about in that last meeting, though, was potentially setting up a quarterly date where new board members could come visit with the PEP committee meeting and get a Reader's Digest version of this. So you can read up on it beforehand and then come. We'll give you a really brief review of that and answer questions. I don't know if we finally decided we were going to do that.
Yeah,
I don't recall.
We were going to do that.
Okay,
we just have to set the schedule. It's one of the many things I'm working on.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
No, that's okay. No, I'm thrilled. I asked Roger for 30 minutes, and he said, can you do it in 15? I said, yeah, I can talk fast and hypermetal.
And it sounds like you got a cold.
What's that?
It sounds like you got a cold, so that's probably not a good idea.
So then after question two, we got question three, which is, does the data demonstrate achievement of policy? Yes, no, optional, comments. And then at the end, after you've gone through all of the three questions and you've looked at everything, you need to make this decision. Board member conclusion. You accept it, reject it, or if you feel it needs further discussion. Okay? And if you reject it, we should close the survey, I then go to the SurveyMonkey data, and I tell, I go, give me all the results, and I download each result. And if you notice, this is what I get. I get number 5, you're getting my data. There were 6 of us that took it, and so I chose it would be easier to put mine up than somebody else's. I was number 5. Remember that, if you would, please, because that took about feeds into the next one. It tells us how long I created it, how long it took. You can, if you get in the middle of your survey and you get called away, you can exit the survey and then come back, and it will bring you back to where you started, where you finished, and then you can continue the survey. And that's what I did with mine. I started on the 6th. And I finished on the 8th. So that you can do. That's one of the things we couldn't do when we originally did it. Once you started, you had to finish. And if you started it thinking you could go back to it, you had to start over. So this way we fixed that error. So now what happens is every question or everything has a queue number to it. So my name, which was Q1, which is Ron Natale, Q2, which is question 1, then Q3, which is comments, there's my yes, comments, question 4, yes, comments. So we're tracking everything that you put in the survey. And it comes in this format that you're seeing up there. This is what I get. Okay? So now, go to the spreadsheet, if you would, please. Okay. So I sat down with all 6 surveys, all 6 results, and I said, okay, how am I going to tabulate this data? Because all I got to do is I got to make sure you as a board get the data without alteration. Okay? So what we did is I said, okay, here's global 1 policy. Question 2, there's the question. There's the response. Comments, that's what I put down. So that, and what you're getting is, this is what's been asked by you in this column, and this is response number 5. Remember, I was number 5. So when you get the results, you get response 1 through 19. You won't know who's responded to what. You can look down and go, there I am. But we decided to keep all of the response, all of the comments, still ambiguous, meaning you don't know who they are. But yet they're up there for discussion. So this is what will be presented to you as a board for these policies. Okay? Now go to the next one. Now, I haven't put the new ones in yet, and I apologize on that. So what we're going to do then is to see if a policy has passed, or to see if it's acceptable by the board, because one of the blessings of the survey is, let's weed out the ones we don't need to talk about, and talk about the ones we need to talk about. Really shrink that down. So what we've done is we've gone to policy 1, we've got yes, no, and the conclusion. We come down here to the bottom and say, okay, 12 people have said yes, and we have a couple, 3 that want more discussion. So we might find everyone likes this interpretation. interpretation accepted by the board. And then when we do the monitoring, that's when we get the inch and a half to 2 inches of documentation that says, here's the reasonableness. And we still can look at the documentation and come back and say, you know, I'm happy with it. And everybody else, and I, Ron can say, I'm happy with it, and everybody else doing well. Or we read the same report.
Yeah.
You know, so we can look at it and say, is this acceptable? So this is an ongoing process for us. But once it's done, then we get into just the monitoring portion of it, and we get those reports on a monthly basis, because we will have a schedule as to how this goes. So this is, and then the PEP committee is not concluding what's passed or not passed, or what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. We're just telling you what the results are and leaving it to you. Greg?
So just to, for a scenario, let's say 8 out of 19 members feel like this needs discussion. That seems like a reasonable amount of people. That one's pretty straightforward. But if only one or two people feel like this needs a lot more discussion, what's the process for moving forward? So, you know, we only have an hour to an hour and a half every month.
Well, I think what we can do as a PEP committee is go to them and say, hey, you know, you're the only one that needs discussion. Can you come prepared to discuss this at the board, take a few minutes, and maybe tell us why you need more discussion? Because it might be that that person who brings that to the board, like say you come and you say, here's why I think it needs more discussion, all of a sudden you've changed 8 minds, and they want to change their ballot, they still can.
Well, I think one of the concerns I've got is policy governance calls for us to act as a board, act as a unit. And I'm concerned that if somebody's going to the PEP committee for further discussion, the rest of the people are going to miss out on that.
Right.
And that might be okay, because a lot of people might feel like it's a waste of their time. What I'm thinking is, and this is just a suggestion, is maybe if there's only a couple of people that want further discussion, I think we even talked about this in PEP committee, is maybe somebody makes a motion to discuss, take it to the board. If everyone says, yeah, let's discuss, great. If not, move on.
Okay.
I think he's correct.
Okay.
So, Ron, when might we expect the first email survey with this new system?
A week from today.
A week from today.
You'll get it. And if I get all my ducks in a row, you may get it Monday. So.
And you want us, what's a reasonable time for us to get it back to you?
Reasonable. That's that word.
If it took you a day, now is that hypothetical?
Well, this one here has got five policies to it. When you start getting into two chapters, you could have 6 or 7 policies that are quite lengthy. And you might do it. My goal was, what Susan suggested that we do is give you a week. And I think probably what we really should do is give you 2. Especially if we get into the, you know, into the sections in chapter 2, where when you get to 2.1, it might have 6 or, I think it has, I think there's like 7 policies.
How about you give the first one a week?
Okay.
And then see, because I think that there's a tendency, at least on my part, to put it off to the last minute if I don't do it right away.
Give Jeannie a week, the rest of us 2.
That's fair. That's reasonable.
You get 1 week, the rest of you get 2. And you will also get emails from me close to the end of that closing period. That
if
says,
you have not.
Please, you know, please, because we can go in and we can look to see who's already responded. And then, let me ask Sherry, can you, after we close it, can you reopen the survey?
I don't think so. I think we tried that. We couldn't reopen
okay,
it.
Okay, so once
then
it's
you better
closed.
Go 2 weeks.
Yeah. Once it's closed, we can't reopen.
If you don't comment within 2 weeks, then you lose your opportunity. Is that fair to say?
Ron's reaction is
so,
yes.
You
do.
Yeah.
You do.
This is from the government.
And there are going to, you know, now, but when I say lose your opportunity, if you haven't responded in a week, I'm going to send out a reminder to the board and say, those of you that have responded, I'm grateful for it. For those of you that don't, you got a week. And then then probably halfway to that next week, you'll get another one from me. And probably the night before it closes, you'll get another one from me. I deal with a standards committee that has 40 to 50 people balloting on a single issue, and we do, and they've got 6 weeks to open that up, and in 10 days and 2 days and 1 day, and we still don't get everybody. So, but it gives you an opportunity to ballot. So this is the process we're going to do. You'll see it either a week from today or at the earliest by then. So any comments?
I'd like to thank you, Ron, for all your hard work on this.
I would echo that. Ron has spent a lot of time. Craig has assisted over the last year, the PEP committee, so staff, everybody that's been involved. The whole idea is there a meeting of the minds of the board and the general manager on what these policies say, that we have spent considerable time on them. And so we'll see a month from now how we all do with that 1 or 2 weeks, whatever it is. Let's try for the 1 week. Thank you, Ron, very much. Appreciate all your efforts.
Do we need to do a motion to accept this, or not necessarily?
I don't think so, okay. Norm. I think we're okay, aren't we? Just to proceed ahead.
Because we've already set that in motion. This is just a piece of our policy governance.
Thank you. I think we're good.
Okay. Just if anybody has any procedural concerns.
Okay. We'll just move ahead, and you'll tell us a month from now at that February meeting how we've done.
Yes, and we'll have time to discuss this then, I hope.
Great. Thank you very much. Item number 10 on our agenda is discuss the meals policy. During the budget process, you may remember, the new members not, there was a question on the amount of money that was budgeted for meals. And so we asked Todd, and he certainly agreed to send us out the food policy, and we all got a copy of that. Many people comment on it. The comments I heard were, remember reading, it's pretty simple and straightforward and makes sense. And Todd prepared a little summary. I think we ought to hand out. So this is what the meals policy allowed the staff to do, the organization to do this past year, 2017, where the money went. So let's have Todd explain that very briefly.
So really there's three overall categories, and that's coming around to you. We have board meals, which in 2017 was $5,600 roughly. So again, we did the training with the consultant. You're all right. So we had the 25-year celebration where we classified that event, the board social, board gifts, and then from time to time, it just depends on when meetings occur, but there are times where some of you will call me and we want to get together, and if it's, if we get together over lunch, then the district may buy lunch. That's not always the case, but that would be that there as well. So the next category is safety meeting. We have a monthly safety meeting that we have with all the employees. We require that. We feel that that creates a safe environment. We're able to go over things, and it's not a big thing, but we'll have muffins or cookies or something and a drink. So we have stuff associated with that. We also have, when we hit certain safety objectives that we have, we may do some things associated with that. We have a safety committee that's made up of every department within the district, that they have a representative on that safety committee, and they tackle the safety issues and bring the issues forward that we're going to tackle at safety meeting. And so there's some money there. And then every year we do an employee banquet. We just had that this last Saturday, where the employees are able to bring their a guest to that, and we have an event, and then we have an employee barbecue in the summer. So that's kind of what we classify as safety meeting. Other meals is really everything else. So when we do travel within the state typically, but when we're doing travel for different things and we're out of the office, then there may be some meals there. We do have officials here, government officials, both on a regional and national level, sometimes a lot with local officials where it makes sense, legislative meetings. I'm down at the legislature at least once a week, sometimes twice a week, and there may be some lunches there. I meet with your city planners monthly, and what we do is we all just have come up with a set amount that we all contribute, and then each month a different entity is in charge of that month's topic or whatever, but we get together for lunch and we help contribute. The same with your city managers if you have those. And then, you know, just various meetings with employees. This year was a little different in that we had the short-range transit plan. And so we actually had Sue and I can't remember who all, Eric, some of you folks were involved. I mean, we had events where we were bringing other entities to give us input and stuff, and we provide them lunch. So those are kind of some of the typical things that you're seeing. This isn't meant to be all-inclusive, but just kind of give you a feel of what we're using the meals budget for.
But if you add up those three numbers, that would be the total
correct
amount spent.
Yes.
In 2017, about $22,000 as I
right, yeah,
eyeball it. So, yep. And I don't remember what we put in the budget, but it was close.
It's
to
around
that
same amount. I think it's so, very similar.
So I guess, are there questions or concerns? The food policy is pretty simple and straightforward. I think many people commented to that. Much simpler than Utah State University's policy, and this is how the staff is interpreting that policy. And so, comments, questions, concerns, anybody?
So yeah,
Eric?
Yeah, because I kind of brought this up before, because having it reviewed by other people, they were concerned about it. You know, when comparing with other entities, government entities, what they do. So, like I'm, you know, when I pulled up this list that says where people are going, you know, quite often it's two or three people going. And so I'm just looking here monthly, like say in March, they have like 26 times, that's almost in a month, going out every day, somebody, one or two, you know, like say, like two people decide we're out on job, we're just gonna stop and get lunch. It looks like they're able to just stop and
who's they?
And get it. So let's
you know
say
that
maybe.
Is which category would that fit in?
This would be the other meals. So
okay.
Yeah, this isn't the safety board meeting meals or the board or the safety meeting board, but this is just other ones. And so you know, like even when I see here, somebody decided to go to Temptation Cupcake for $2.32. I guess they wanted a cupcake. You know, little things that most other agencies, like even Amber was saying, Cache County can't even do that. So it seems really excessive. And so I was going to talk with Rich Anderson and get his, like what Logan City does. And then I'm checking with Cache County and see what their meal policy is and see if we can't make it a little more in line with what other government agencies do, you know, because this, like I say, if I went by this a month by month, it's averaging three and four times per week that people are going out, maybe two people or three people going out and getting lunch. You know, this isn't just a legislative meeting or a city manager meeting. I mean, this is, like I say, seems real excessive compared to what other agencies can do. So I think, and then the other thing, when you show this to the public and your elected official, they get kind of question on it, and then it doesn't look good either for, you know, when in the public's eyes. So it's definitely something I think probably would need to be reformed or the policy tightened to be more in line with what other government agencies do.
So I guess there are a couple ways it could be handled. If the board feels as you do that there's a concern, we could adjust the policy and try to tighten it up. I mean, that's difficult, I think. You know, when you interpret what will benefit or potential benefit to the transit district, that's not easy to, we kind of have to trust staff people, or we could limit the budget a little bit, put limits on the amount of money, and if they run out of money or they have to budget a little more tightly during the year, it seems to me those are the only two ways we could deal with it. Any other thoughts? So we appreciate Eric's research and thoughts on this.
So when we have our quarterly report, can we just have it specified on the mails for this next year? Maybe your other mails and other ones, and then keep track of it that way. This already
the specific occasions on.
We can just follow with the dollar amount. So other meals we spent here, and if it seems too much, then we can ask more clarification. That way, as a board, we can watch it.
Okay. What's the feeling of other board members? Do you want
we
that kind of detail?
Split it out in the budget by these categories.
I would think, wouldn't be, that's just drilling down one more level. You already do it that way, or you couldn't have pulled these numbers together. So we could just have it drilled down to this level on a quarterly basis. Would that help you, Norm?
That'd be great.
Okay. Can I make a suggestion? Ron? Instead, we do that, go ahead and do that, but when it comes to sections 2.4 and 2.5, when we're looking for reasonable interpretation, is that that's when we actually make sure that the policies that we've established reach down to get to this level. If not, then we need to go back and look at our policy. You know, because I know that that would help establish the policy, because our policy should drive their actions.
Right.
And so I would recommend until we get to those, is that we do that on a quarterly basis.
Makes sense.
That way we've got what's being spent.
We have quarterly. A better understanding.
Okay. Any other thoughts? Is that agreeable?
Can I just ask a clarifying question to make sure I understand? I want to make sure I understand. So what I heard was that on a quarterly basis we would report how much we spent in these categories. Is that I understand?
Yes.
Okay.
So within the context of the larger.
Sure.
And maybe a little detail so we understand, you know, what it was.
Well, it can always be a note.
Sure.
It doesn't have to be in the spreadsheet itself.
I think Eric's trying to figure out who's going out.
Could we look at also the policy and maybe, like what, because I think Ron suggested that last time, possibly tightening it up and making it more in line with, you know, let's see what other agencies allow and what they do, government agencies, and maybe tighten it up something more along the lines of what they are doing.
Is this a policy you're going to get
this
feedback
would be, on? When we get into 2.4 and 2.5, this is where we need to put down, as we go through it, where we need to see things tightened up or whether we need to see, you know, we may look at what the board policy is and we like his interpretation. I said, you know, that, you know, we can fix it, but then you're fixing one issue. But yet when you look at the policy as a whole, it might undo it. And that's what I don't want to have happen.
Yeah.
So when we get to 2.4 and 2.5, which are the budgeting policies, then we look at this with whatever else you want to look at in conjunction with it. You know, if you want to pull in USU, if you want to pull in, you know, the Cache County, heck, I can go to all the national labs and get their policy if you want that. You know, it's GSA rates.
Yeah.
You know, but the thing is that it's, you know, we can look at it then, but up until then, let's look and see what's being spent quarterly. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, we could pick apart our whole policy again, but we spent quite a bit of time on that. I don't know that there's a desire on most of us to do that again. And so I feel like, Ron, let's analyze it. Let's see what we come up with quarterly, understand it better, and go
well,
from there.
Well, too, Roger, I think that it's important as we're going through the policy documentation and we're doing the surveys that we'll, if we get that additional information for two quarters, it's going to be before August, so we'll have at least two quarters. We'll have a better understanding of whether we really need to change that policy at that point in time.
Good point.
And then we can go at it from this way instead of this way.
Is that okay, Eric? We'll continue to scrutinize this at least quarterly and understand it rather than just go and ask what everybody else's policy is. If we find out there's an issue, then we can consider changing our policy and looking at others at that time.
Yeah, I just thought the existing policy, I mean, seems, I mean, they've had it to abide by now, and it seems just a really, really light compared to looking at the, you know, all the transactions and the meals, you know.
Well, it's so. Interpretation of policy. That's what Ron's getting at, you know. Do we agree as a board with the general manager's interpretation of this policy and these other policies? And that's a question. I just glanced at Utah State University's. Any meal is okay to be paid for with USU budget if it potentially benefits the university. At least that was in there, was it not?
Yes, it is.
And
yeah,
that's certainly up to interpretation, you know, so these
but
are,
then
these
there
are not easy.
Things added on there that kind of zeroed it in too, and
okay.
Other things and reporting and things, so.
Yeah, yeah, so. Anyway, yes, please, go ahead, Cecilia.
So looking at this, where do we see the breakdown? Because I can't see if this is excessive because I don't know how many people went to the employee banquet. You know, like cost per person?
About 100 people.
Where's that information like for each one of these things?
So on the quarterly summary, you can give us a little more detail.
I don't know if it's excessive.
It's really what you want me to give you. I will give you what you want.
Well, I would suggest that you keep the finance, the total cost in the spreadsheet and then use notes to augment that.
Well, that helps us.
And may I be excused?
Yeah, that would go great.
So I was surprised to see you here.
So a lot of that, too, is on the transparency. You go on the website and then look at itemized under their separate categories.
Yeah,
so that's
thanks,
why.
Thanks, have a good trip wherever you're going. Let's go ahead. Let's move ahead, folks, with that, if we could, please. We've got other agenda items to cover. So we're going to get some detail, summary detail with notes of explanation each quarter, and we'll determine from that if we need to change the policy. All right, let's see. Todd, do you want to talk about report on expanding color ride boundaries?
Can you hear me if I talk directly? Is that all right?
A little louder, maybe.
A little louder, okay. Okay, we're going to go through this and see what we get. So the question, is this okay?
Yeah,
okay. The question that the board posed a month or two ago was, should the district expand the ADA paratransit service to city boundaries, which is beyond the ADA requirements? For the new board members, the ADA is the Americans with Disabilities Act. So please stop me if you have questions as we go along. So that's the question that you asked me to come and talk with you about. So I kind of want to just go through where we are at today. This is the current service. So we currently provide ADA paratransit within 3/4 of a mile off of the center line of the road that the fixed route uses. And so wherever the fixed route goes, we just draw a line, and we try to be as generous as we can, honestly. So we try to give folks the benefit. And then we currently have 5 buses in service during peak time, just meeting this need. And peak time right now is from 8:30 in the morning until 3:30 in the afternoon. We currently follow the Americans with Disability Act's requirements, meaning that in order to qualify for this service, you have to go through an application process. Now, just because you have a disability does not mean you qualify. And so what happens is we have a 5- or 6-page application that they fill out, and then they give us permission to talk with their doctors so that we can verify the severity of their disability. And so, for example, we have folks that are unconditionally eligible, meaning that they can use a service for any trip. And then we have folks that are conditionally eligible, that it's only for certain trips that meet the conditions. For example, they may have a trip where the bus stop is right outside their door, and it's right outside the door of where they're going. But then they may have another trip where they're going, the bus stop is 5 blocks away. That's too far for them to go. They can only go 1 block. And so for that trip, they're eligible to use paratransit. So there's a lot of variety in this. Now, most folks that use our service are unconditionally eligible. Okay, so most folks are. There's all sorts of requirements with the ADA about how long they can be on the bus, when we can pick them up, how long they have to wait. I won't go into all of that, but just know that the ADA sets requirements on that we have to meet. One of those requirements is distance, that we are required to provide service within 3/4 of a mile. We are not required to provide service beyond that. So we are meeting the minimum requirement, or we're meeting the requirements of the ADA. We're not going beyond that. That is currently our service.
We currently have about 350 eligible riders. Again, not all of them ride all of the time, but there is a large group. And then this is compliant with the regulation. Okay, so as we went through this, we wanted to consider some things. When we look at potential demand, we've identified 6 to 10 people that are beyond, they are outside that 3/4 of a mile, but they live within the city boundaries of a city. And that they've come to us and they've made a request. I should note here real quick that, again, if they're deemed eligible, if they've gone through that process and they're deemed eligible, even though they live outside the district boundaries, we give them the ability to get to a safe spot within the district boundaries, and then they can ride the service. So of these 6 to 10 people that are outside the area, the vast majority of them have worked out that arrangement, and they come within the boundaries, and then they use the service. We also, when we're looking at potential demand, we also are looking at that a number of years ago, we were providing service from Richmond to Hiram on what we call the Lifeline. It was a couple days a week in the north, a couple days a week in the south. We changed that service to be ADA service, and so we went back and looked at how much did the demand increase when we expanded that. One thing to note on demand, because of this service, one person can have a huge impact on demand. So if we have a person that they take 6 or 7 trips a day, that can have a big impact. One person can have a big impact. So the point here is it's hard to truly understand demand because of that, or project demand. Also, the trip length can have a big impact too. So it's much easier to provide service here in Logan because it's shorter trips, and if we go out to Richmond and we have to provide a lot of trips back and forth between Logan and Richmond, that's going to take up some service. So when we're projecting demand, just understand we're going to do our best to project it based on history, based on what we're seeing as far as ridership, but know that there can be some things out there that we could miss that projection. Okay, from an administrative standpoint, there are some additional things that we will have to do if we go beyond the ADA, because we have to calculate things differently. Because it's beyond ADA service, we have to report it differently. And so all of a sudden we have to tabulate miles differently. We have to collect things differently. And so it does create some administrative burden. I just want you to understand that. Also, we think that even though it does, we think initially, based on our demand projections, we think we could handle that. However, again, you know, if that increases too much, then we might have to look at doing some staffing increases or purchasing some software, things of that nature. I'll get into that. Staffing and vehicles, we think that with what we're projecting the demand to be, we wouldn't need any additional vehicles right now, and therefore we could meet it with the current service. But if the demand went really high, i.e. we started having a lot of long trips, or we started having clients that came on that were using the system substantially, we may have to invest in vehicles, staffing, computer software to help us manage that, hardware on the buses to help us manage that. We know right now that with our existing vehicle fleet, we could add up to one vehicle currently and not have to buy more buses. So we have the ability to add one additional vehicle. Any questions? I hope I'm not going over this too quickly.
You mentioned that there's 6 people that you know of. How do you know that there's a lot of people that qualify but just didn't send an application because they knew they were way beyond the boundary?
That's a great question. And that's what's hard about demand is we know there are people out there that just may not know about the service or think, well, it doesn't apply to me and their families are taking care of that, or they may not be going. And that's where it's hard to project that demand because there is some unknown in that, and we just don't know that. So we're doing our best to project it based on previous history and based on the requests we're aware of. But you're right, Jeff, there's some folks out there we just probably don't know. Yeah, great point. Okay. Yeah, please, Roger.
I'm guessing that if it is made known in the outlying communities, the far extremity of the service area,
sense.
I don't know. That could go up quite a bit.
It could.
Potentially.
It could.
We don't know, but it could.
Again, at this time, based on our best projections, we think initially we could probably handle it. But it could. It could. So when we look at costs, again, this is probably an obvious point, but what we're talking about are these are costs that could be used elsewhere. They could be used for fixed route transit somewhere. They could be used in another city. We could look at expanding to Wellsville. So if we expand, I just want us to understand this is an expansion of service that we are talking, an expansion of service. We could use those resources somewhere else. Again, I said we could add one vehicle. We look at that. If we add that vehicle in our existing service time frame, that's about a $35 an hour add. So it's not huge. I just wanted you to understand the cost. Again, we may have to get to a point where we're investing in some computer software to help us manage the tabulations and things so that the drivers aren't having to stop and write this down, but it's all done through computer software and hardware on the buses. Just a point, so currently, and this is 2014 NTD data. I pulled this just because it's the most recent one that we've reported to NTD that they've reported back out, and so I just want to use that as a thing. But just to give you an idea, fixed route transit costs about 62 cents a mile for operations, where paratransit costs $6.47 a mile. So this is the most expensive service we operate because it's kind of like a taxi cab. Again, we try to group trips. So if we're going out to Smithfield, we're going to try and pick two or three people up in that area. But again, they have to be going at the similar time frame, right, and then try to take them. And so we're trying to be as productive as we can. If you recall, we're operating at about 35 passengers per hour on the fixed route, and the paratransit were about 2.5 passengers per hour. So from an efficiency standpoint, this isn't the most efficient service. Community support, I think this is an important thing. So serving the disabled population is one of the original reasons CVTD was established. And so I do think that's an important thing for us to consider, that this probably is one of the original reasons we were brought here. The community has shown the district support in the past. If you look at our short-range transit plan surveys, not just this one we most recently did, but over time, there always has been this support for the disabled community. When you look at the zero fare public hearing we had a few years ago, we heard through that people appreciated zero fare because it helped low-income, elderly, and disabled. And so again, they said, we appreciate that it's a value in our community to take care of folks. And then we've also done voter surveys. And if you recall, for the new folks, we did a voter survey back in 2015, and you had to have voted in three of the last six election cycles to be considered for the survey. And so we knew we were talking to voters. And so you can see up there the very first thing, bus service can be a lifeline to seniors and persons with disability who otherwise have few options for travel. 92% of the voters said that was completely accurate. So we feel that there is community support for taking care of the disabled community. So come back to the question, should the district do this or not? So my recommendation is this, that we be a little patient, that you be a little patient. And I know it's hard. The folks that have talked to Sally and the folks that you may hear from, they've been in our office because we've told them we can't go beyond the 3/4 of a mile. And we said, but if you get to this safe spot, we'll pick you up. And in the case of Seamus, who's the person that contacted Sally, he appealed that decision. And so we met with him, and he came in and did a formal appeals hearing. From a personal standpoint, your heart goes out to them, right? I mean, it's like, man, they need the service. The reason that I'm saying let's be a little cautious is that this is going to use resources. We're going to be looking at other requests that we've had from other communities or from other people within the community that says, hey, we want more convenient service. Hey, we want more frequent service. Or, hey, we have a new area in the community that needs to be served. And so my reason for saying let's be cautious and let's wait and consider this with all the other things is, from a transportation planning background, it's always best to look at the overall plan and then say, how do we fit and meet the needs of everyone as best we can? The other thing is, there's always going to be individuals that are outside the boundaries. So if we change the boundary and we say, let's go to the city limits, then somebody might say, well, I know I don't qualify for ADA paratransit. Man, I sure would like that trip. Can you open it up to the general public? Or I'm 65. Is there a way I can qualify just because of my age? And so that's the thing, is really where do we stop that? And so, again, I just come back. My recommendation is let's wait. We're working on coming back with recommendations for you of how do we implement changes and how do we meet the needs. And we consider this very strongly within that scope. Now, if you decide, no, we still think maybe we should do this, we can do it. I think we can. But I would say with some assumptions. We think that if you choose to move forward with it, that you keep it to people only that meet the ADA requirement. So it's not going to be general public. It's not just seniors. It's only folks that qualify through the ADA that have to go through that application process because they have a disability that keeps them from riding the fixed route.
Which is your current policy.
Which is the current policy. Okay. Now, the current policy also says we only go 3/4 of a mile. So this would alter that policy a little bit. Also, we would require the riders to comply with the ADA. Even though we're going beyond the ADA, they are still going to have to require with everything except the mileage aspect of that. We're also saying that you stay zero fare. There was a comment said, well, maybe they could pay for their portion to get them into the district boundaries. We start capturing a fare, it creates a whole new complexity that we think is not worth it, and you're not going to recover that from them. You do not want that cost of that from them. It's too much. We also think that we would not, to Roger Pond's point over here, we would not advertise this. We would just only go to the folks that have requested it previously, and then if new folks request it. So it's kind of a word-of-mouth thing. We're not, at least in the first little bit, in what we're saying a 6 to 12-month evaluation period, we're not going to advertise it. It's kind of just on request only because we don't know what that demand is that's lurking out there. We want some time to understand that demand. And then this would only go from Richmond to Hiram. It wouldn't include Lewiston at this point. It would only go from Richmond to Hiram. So that's really my presentation. Again, other questions that I can answer? Real quick, maybe I can show you something graphically. Please.
How did you come to your 62 cents a mile and then your $6 a mile?
I'm going to let Curtis answer that while I pull something up.
Because your total miles for your vehicles in 2017 was 875,000 miles.
Well, as Todd explained it, he was pulling old data off of NTD. When we file specific reports with the National Transit Database, we have to specifically break out our costs between what's considered demand response, or right now that's all of our ADA service, and we break out the cost between what's our fixed route service. And then there's calculations based off of those cost allocations. And when they talk about these cost allocations, it includes every single cost. So it includes an allocation of administrative costs, everything. So once again, this is based off of older data. We'll be updating that. We have to file the reports in by April. It takes NTD a year or so to finally validate everything, and then it takes them a little while to get it published. But that's where that data is coming from. But typically paratransit costs are running somewhere in the neighborhood of about 10 times what our fixed routes do.
Is that per person, per rider, or per mile?
It's per passenger mile. Is the way that it's really calculated. And so while you may be taking total miles, we have to calculate a passenger mile. It's part of the transit database. And so it's that passenger miles that's being used for that calculation.
Okay. Any other questions on Todd's presentation.
Awesome. So, okay. Okay.
While you're looking at that, then, just for my understanding, we could make a decision now, and you would support it, to serve people with disabilities in the communities now served in their boundaries, within the jurisdictional boundary, not just 3/4 of a mile off of the route. You would support that if we decided to go with that.
That is correct.
And then try it a little bit, not advertise it. But you would prefer we wait and look at all of the optional, the other options on how we could spend money or serve more people, which is really related, money and people served. But when will we know the other options? What's the period of time that we would?
It might be a few months as we're working through that, right?
I
mean,
as you analyze the recommendations from the short range transit
plan. As we're trying to bring that to you, yes. So again, if the board's saying, no, we don't want to wait that long, then I do think we can do it. Again, giving those assumptions. This is just to show you graphically. Man, this is hard. But, so I don't know if you can see that. Yeah, you can see it pretty good. We'll go to every city, but so these colored areas are the city boundaries. The shaded area is where we currently serve. So you can see that, honestly, in most cities, we're pretty close to the boundaries anyway. But there are some folks that live outside this. So let me go so you can see all the cities. But so you can see here in Hiram, there's a little bit here on the east, a little bit on the west.
So is that the 3/4 mile that we see in the purple there, whatever color that is?
Yeah, this is the 3/4 of a mile from the bus stops.
Okay.
So you can see Hyde Park up on the east bench, North Logan up on the east bench, some out here on the west. Yeah. Smithfield, we got a little bit on either side, and Richmond a little bit on the east. Yeah, Jeff.
I would recommend doing it on a trial basis because if there is a huge demand, it might cause some issues. So just to really determine how much of a need there really is, because you don't know until you try it.
Okay.
I got a comment. Is if we do it on a trial basis, then we track costs because we still have to decide how we're going to implement the short-range transit plan. So if this starts absorbing cash, we may not have much of a choice at the short-range transit plan. So do we sacrifice the ADA or do we sacrifice, you know, the riders? I mean, heck, I'd love to see, you know, I know that in the past that I've gotten a lot of people in Richmond that said, why can't we have service that gets me down so I can go see the shows at Eccles Theater? You know, I mean, there's all kinds of these things. I've heard people say, why can't we have more riders from Richmond so we can go shopping? I don't want to have to go shopping and then come back 3 hours later because that's when the bus gets here, you know, or something like that. So I think there's things that we as a board need to address. And I know this is going to, you know, this will make us look good. This will make the CVTD look good. But the thing is that, you know, is it going to impact the rest of the stuff that we're doing?
Just so that I can be clear, and Curtis can correct me if I mistake on this comment, because he will know much better than me. I don't want to give the impression that this is going to eat up a ton of dollars based on what we perceive the demand to be. Now, there may be some demand that we don't perceive, and then that may. But I don't envision the fact that we can do it with our existing fleet, and the fact that we're talking 6 to 10 people initially, You know, I don't see this in eating up a ton of costs, but that's the concern I have, is that all of a sudden it could balloon, and that's the concern.
Well, my concern is, you've seen the old commercial, you know, these three people told these three people told these three people. The disabled community communicates. And if they realize that they now have a better option, they're going to let all of their friends know that are in the same position.
And then if you take it away,
then you're in trouble.
Then you're the bad guy.
Yeah. This is why you said, I mentioned it as a trial basis, just to see how.
Just remember, perception is 90% of the rule.
Okay, other comments? I'm a little concerned about time here because we have other things Todd needs to cover, other items. So,
does the short-range transit change some of those routes, like in North Logan? Because if it's out a little bit further, it automatically changes your boundaries.
That's a great point. So, yeah, I mean, there may be some changes, but you're still going to have that. You're going to have people outside the district boundaries. We're not going to probably have it to the point that it's going to cover everything.
But those routes won't change until the board's implements parts of the short-range transit. But right now, everything's the way it is. But if we change a route or eliminate a route because of our policy or how we accept the short-range transit plan, that will be based on what we do.
So how far out are we on the short-range transit plan? Are we a couple board meetings, a couple months?
It's a couple months. I mean, we're working on it. We're going to be bringing stuff to you. But again, this is going to be up to this board. You may want to have some more public input process. I don't know, you know, so it may take some time. And when we look at implementing, again, changes, we're going to have for you different types of changes. We're going to have changes that we could probably do fairly quickly, changes that are going to require additional vehicles. That's going to be 18 months, 2 years. You know, but even changes as moving bus stops and things like that, we have to blue stake. There's a process. It does take time, which is why we typically only try to do significant changes once a year. We may change a bus stop here and there, minor things, throughout the year if something comes up, but we really only look at doing significant changes once a year because it is a lengthy process. So just to give you an idea, what Jody and I used to do, you just go change the bus stop. We need the bus stop change. All right, no problem. Let's go change it. Now we have three, four-page checklist, Jody. I mean, we have to change it on the GTFS feed, the Google feed, because we have real-time location. Guess what? We don't control when Google gets that updated, but we're not going to change it until Google gets it updated because people will complain. Your bus says it's – your real-time feed says it's going the wrong place. I was waiting here. There's no bus stop, but it said it was going to go here. So it takes time. That's my only thing, is it's not just a – we flip the switch. It's going to take time.
May I just congratulate you and the staff on the presentation. I thought it was very well laid out the history and the background and why we might want to make that fairly low-cost change. And I heard you say it was okay to do it. But then I heard you say, but it's probably better to wait, but you don't feel too strongly either way.
Well, I'm always, from a planning background, I always think it's best to plan big picture, right? But I also understand from a personal standpoint that you have folks out there that have desires and needs, and
so
that's really hard.
What's the feeling of the board? We could adopt a motion right now, or we could delay this for a month, or we could wait until we see the whole picture. Not the whole picture, but other options based on the recommendations in the short-range transit plan. So what's the feeling of the board? We either need a motion to move forward and do this right now, or let's have a motion to delay until we see other optional ways to provide more service.
I motion to delay until we get the short-range transit to see how it affects the boundaries.
Thank you very much. We do have a motion on the table to delay this until later.
I'll second it.
We have a second by Sue. Any
could
further
I
discussion?
Could I suggest we have some kind of time limit on that so that I'm sure Todd's team will have this in 2 to 3 months. Could we say maybe 3 months we revisit if we haven't seen the results of the short term?
We'll try to do it sooner than that, but that sounds
okay.
Sounds fair.
Okay, so we have a motion on the table to not act, delay action until we see the other optional ways that we could provide additional service to possibly different groups. Any further discussion on the motion? If not, we'll proceed to vote. All in favor of the motion say aye.
Aye.
Opposed say nay. Any abstentions? Thank you very much. I think that was handled very well.
Thank you.
Thank you, board members.
Appreciate it. Yeah.
So let's go ahead. Board chair report. I don't really have anything to report other than thank you all for your service and what you do. And we have a few more items that Todd would like to cover.
So one thing that we were asked to cover was the, I'm trying to find it, in your packet you have the ridership report. So it looks like this. It's got some, spreadsheet with a couple years, and then there's some graphs behind that. Sean couldn't be here tonight, but so you can just look at it. We try to keep a three-year history in front of you on ridership. I think one thing to note is that ridership's going down. And I don't know if you had the opportunity to read the article I sent out with the report, but it's an interesting thing that's going on, and I appreciate Norm saying let's maybe hold off a little bit. We're still trying to get our hands around how our industry is changing with the advent of the smartphone and what that's created as far as the way society views, you know, immediate response, the way that they have everything at their fingertips, and so you know, the way they perceive things is much different with the advent of Uber, Lyft. You know, people take public transit differently. It's not just a bus anymore, and so our ability to be convenient is diminishing with fuel prices, with auto loans as low as they are. So those of you that read that, you saw that, and so we're really trying to figure out as we're going through the short-range transit plan, how do we really target the people that we need to target, and how do we do that in a way that will cause them to have a desire to use the bus? And that's becoming more and more difficult. So, you know, I've always tried to caution the board that we don't want to just chase ridership. I do think there are things we should be doing to encourage ridership, and I think that's an important thing. But we've got to figure out who are we trying to attract on the bus and how do we serve them the best possible way. And so that's what we're trying to grapple with right now so that we can identify that going forward. With that said, you know, when you look at our peer systems, for those that are new on the board, when we look at peer systems, if you go to our short-range transit plan, I'm happy to email you all sorts of documents. The peer systems that were identified by the consultants that are peers, similar in serving community size, similar in serving demographics, we still rank highest as far as overall ridership among those systems. Now, a lot of that's zero fare. You know, we have other peer systems that aren't zero fare, and I openly acknowledge that. I think that's a great thing. But that is usership, and so that's a good thing. So I'm concerned about ridership. We get a ridership report every day. Every day we know what the ridership is for that day. And these guys can tell you I'm concerned about it. But we're trying to make sure that we don't overreact to it. So, but please, if you go through these numbers and you have concerns or questions that you want to see answered, let me know. Sean has asked that we try and break out for you by city. That takes a lot more work, and you know, we can look at how do we do that. We only do surveys every 3 years. So again, Curtis is going to jump in and correct me, right, Curtis, if I misspeak. So we only do surveying every 3 years to the level that we can even try to sample what's happening in each community. We used to do that when the system was much smaller and we had the ability. We just can't do that anymore to that level, to where I can tell you at a drop of a hat how many people are riding from each city. But we can try and extrapolate that for another time. So that's the ridership report.
Hey, Todd, can I just ask
please,
you one?
Please.
So with this decrease in ridership, has that changed our STIC funding?
Yes. Great question.
Did we lose another one? Or?
Yeah, so that's a great question. Thanks for bringing it up. So STIC funding is small transit intensive city funding. So, again, they take cities that are between 200,000 and 1 million in population served. They set benchmarks that those cities are those transit entities are hitting. And then for those entities below 200,000, between 50,000 and 200,000, if we hit certain benchmarks that those cities are hitting, where they're higher urban areas, more dense, then we get some additional funding. So we've qualified in the past. There's six different funding criteria. we qualified for as many as three and as many as four. Thank you, Curtis. We've qualified for as many as four. And are we down to one yet, or are we think we're going to be – we're still at two. We're worried that we might go down to one. So it is something that's concerned for us. So that's a potential reduction in funding from not hitting those, and it's a concern. It's a concern for our industry. I mean, I talk to everyone in the state. I talk to people across the country. Ridership is going down. I mean, it just is. And we've got to figure out how to deal with that. But what you see in that article, and I'd encourage you to go read it, is again where ridership's going to sustain us. Where we're seeing it sustaining is where parking's inconvenient, where transit's more convenient than taking the car, and that's really hard here in Cache Valley. Our commutes are short. Parking is free. It's unlimited. The university really is that only place that we deal with some of those things. So, great question.
Just one more,
please.
Jeff just asked me that, and I'll let you answer it. He says, like, generally, how much is that stick funding worth?
Curtis, remind us, what is that worth per figure?
Yeah. $200,000 per year less because of lower ridership. Is that what you're saying?
$200,000 per of those, each one of those six items is worth $200,000. So if you hit all six, you would get an extra $1.2 million. Not quite $1.2 million. We've been consistently hitting three, and we've been getting about $600,000 extra, a little bit less than that.
So that's a great question, and so this is the thing. So we are losing some funding, right? And so it's like, well, let's boost ridership again. And again, there's ways to do that. We could go right now and design service to boost ridership, and it would be we make it as convenient as possible to get to the university. So we would go out, and we'd have 15-minute service from Hiram, and we'd have 15-minute service from Richmond, Smithfield, and we would take it all to the university, right? Because that's where parking's a challenge, where – and we could boost that ridership. That may or may not be the thing that's best for our community. So that's where we want to look at things in the overall transit system and the overall transportation plan so that we say, is it worth losing $200,000 because we're going to serve this community? Because if we don't, we would. And those are the discussions we're wrestling with. It's tough.
Or in order to fund the serving more ADA folks, yes, expanding it, you've got to compensate by doing something easy and getting more riders, right? You've got to balance the two out.
Not all of the stick funding is based off of ridership.
Correct.
Some is just by providing vehicle hours and vehicle revenue miles based off the population estimates.
Yeah.
Some of those are the ones that we've had trouble getting because we've been operating more efficiently. And so if we were to expand service, we could actually hit some of those just by and your ridership per hour is going to drop, and we have to adjust those standards. So not all these stick fundings
is totally
exactly
ridership
in the same way. Some of them actually counteract each other.
Okay. Thank you. Complicated stuff. So we need to move along. I'd like to end this in 5 minutes.
I will.
Okay, one more question. You have the total mileage. Would it be possible to track the mileage of those assist ones so when we do implement, we can see how it changes?
So clarify that for me so that I understand.
So if we do the ADA thing,
yeah, so right now
how many more miles are we going to travel roughly, and will that help or hurt the stick funding?
Or we can track the ones we are doing now, because right now you have total vehicle miles. I don't know if we could separate that into the assisted miles. And then
well, I'm
that
sure
way.
They're doing
we,
that,
we,
aren't
we
they?
Actually are. We just This is the sheet that the old service committee came up with, and this is how they wanted it. We have a lot more information that's there. And, yes, we are tracking the call ride miles separately. They are being
so in the next one, could we just get that so we could just at least add one more line on those?
Sure.
That'd be great.
Anything else? Do you
I'll,
have more information?
I'll be done in 5 minutes. I'm just going to cover this.
Thank you very much. Because we're losing people here.
Yeah, I know. We're going to be done. So just real quickly, this is something that we're wanting to do with the board each month is give you a handout on something that is something that you can use with your constituents or with your city council. You can take it back to them. So the PEP committee suggested we do the first one on finances. And so this is just kind of an overview. It's meant to be very high level. It's meant to give you some information related to our funding, to how expenses, revenues have come in. You see on the back, there's a vehicle replacement schedule. So again, if you have questions and you want to go through this, let me know. I'm happy to do that later. But this is something that you could take to your council and give them a report if you want. Just let me know how you can do that. We'll try to do something similar, something different every month.
Could you put that on the agenda next time and go through it in
sure,
more
please.
Detail? Would that
yeah.
be all right?
We can maybe cover two next time.
Okay.
Could I get a PDF copy of it?
For sure. Yeah.
Council?
Yes.
Anything else that we ought to cover? We've covered lots of things tonight. I know our time is valuable, so thank you very much, Todd and Beth. Anything else?
Oh, thank you so much.
Oh, yeah. So W-2s were here for everybody. Where do we sign? Just on the list? Is that the same as the attendance list?
No.
Oh, I've only signed one list, so. Okay. All right. If
no,
you haven't
signed
two
signed
things,
it,
two clipboards.
You've signed it.
Did I sign
it?
Oh. Hey, thank you. We'll call the meeting adjourned.